Coming up, we're going to talk about how to save your career after a big mess up. And then Carvana fired a bunch of people the wrong way. And inflation, how it's hurting restaurants that remained. And we're going to coach you up. Let's go. All right, folks, welcome to the Ken Coleman Show. It's where we help you get the competitive edge to make more money and have a bigger impact. So, a lot of people who, I've got my computer on. There it is. The YouTube feed right there on the old Mac. We'll talk to some of these live viewers in the YouTube chat room in a moment. But I forgot to turn my volume down. So, there you go. So, let's talk about those of you who you feel like you've done something that has ruined your career or could ruin your career, whatever it is. And we're not talking something illegal. Some of these things are just, you can't come back from, right? It's like in your area. But you can, in most cases, you can restore your professional reputation. And so I want to talk about that today. How do you begin to restore what you think is a career-ending mistake or a career-ending poor decision? So let's look at this. So most people, when we mess up big time, we feel as though it's done. Our reputation is irretrievable. It's just who we are as humans, right? It's like we do something really bad. It's like, ugh. And in a professional setting, the very natural response is to say, I'm leaving. I'm ashamed. No one's ever going to forgive me. My brand, my personal brand is destroyed, whatever. And I think you have to treat these career mess ups, professional mess ups, like we would relationship mess ups. Now, I've been married 24 years, just recently celebrated my 24th anniversary. And as a dude who's been married 24 years, I can tell you, I got a long track record of messing up and upsetting Stacy, and doing dumb things as guys do. I mean, it's just part of the deal. None of these have been things that would ruin the relationship or the marriage. So blessed for that. But there are times where she don't want to talk to me, right? Because I've done something dumb. Fully admit this. So what do you do? Do I just say, that's it? I hurt Stacy's feelings. I blew it and I'm done. I got to go find a new wife. Well, of course not. Some people do. I highly, highly, highly suggest that you don't do that. So what do I do? So I'm going to teach out of this today, though, what works in relationships works in the professional setting. When you feel like you've blown it, you upset a coworker, you made a really bad decision, and maybe you got fired over it, or maybe you're in danger of getting fired, and you feel like my time is done here. I want to give you what I believe are some steps to take that could restore your professional reputation. Because if we don't do this, if I don't do this in my marriage with Stacy, we may not talk to each other for a long time. Or if I don't ever try to heal or ever try to restore this, then the relationship is in fact broken and we don't want that. All right, so here's what we do. First, you've got to own it. You got to own it. Now, when I say own it, it doesn't mean admit it. See, there's a difference between owning your big stupid decision and owning it. Admitting it is, I admit I was a jerk. I admit I did this. I did this. I did this. That's okay. That's great. But how many of you parents before have disciplined your kids and they're not real sorry? They admit they did something wrong, but there's no contrition. They don't really own it. And that's what we're talking about when I say own it. You don't just admit it. You apologize for it and you have a spirit of, I know why I did it. I wish I had not done it. And I'm going to do everything in my power not to do it again. Will you forgive me? This is owning it. By the way, in that little outline I gave you, do you notice I didn't make any excuses for the poor decision? There's no excuses. When I said I know why, that means I've looked inward and I've said, I was this way, maybe I got triggered, whatever. That's all on me. And I'm aware of it. Boy, that's beautiful. You know why this is so beautiful? Because most people don't own it. They'll admit it, but they don't own it. So step one is to own what you've done wrong. Number two, now that you've owned it, you have to heal. Some of you are going, wait a second, well, what about the other person? Yeah, of course. But when we as good and decent people hurt others or do something stupid, even though we cause some collateral damage, we also hurt ourselves. Maybe we're down on ourselves, beating ourselves up. Maybe we don't believe that we have an opportunity to restore ourselves, whatever it is. And we don't let ourselves off the hook. We don't forgive ourselves and heal from it. That leads to the third move. Now, once I've healed from it, I got to get my head back up. No shame in my game. And I've got to look forward. I've already owned it and I'm healed from it. So now I got to totally focus forward, upward. That's the game. You've already dealt with it. There's no sense in skulking around. Get your head up. You're not the only person ever done something stupid in your personal life or professional life. It's going to be okay. Now, if the mistake was bad enough to sever your relationship with your employer, you still have to enter in somewhere else with your head high. Because you suffered your consequences. This is what drives me nuts about our society in our treatment of people who have gone to prison. They've paid their time. They've paid their debt to society. And so within the legal system by which we have penalized them, once we let them out, we ought to restore them. Give them a chance. I make this point because in the workforce now, we have so many good and decent people who have some talent, who can contribute to this world, but because of their legal past, they have a hard time getting in, and it drives me crazy. It's not who we are as humans. Forgiveness requires restoration. So, why does this matter? Because so many people, listen to me, folks, so many people that are watching and listen to this program either are suffering from this or know people who are suffering from shame. Shame is a prison that many people never come out of. They're so ashamed of what they did, even though they've owned it and they, in some ways, have healed from it. But there's not true healing when shame still exists. As you get to a place of healing, I can, if I have a scar on my arm, I can rub my hands over the scar and I can recount the pain in great detail. But when I touch what was once an open wound, there's no more pain. And so shame is a form of pain. True healing means I have no shame. And I'm going to walk with my head high, my shoulders back, and I still realize that while I'm drawing breath, I have a unique contribution that the world needs from me. So here's my little challenge. If you screwed up, do those things and then get over it. The world needs you. Please be you. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show, where we are setting you up to have the competitive edge. You are competing. You are competing. Let me say it again. You are competing. You're competing against the you of yesterday. You're competing against coworkers, maybe, for that promotion. You're competing against people in the outside world. I know that. It's okay to say it because winning is actually pretty freaking fun. And you know what's great about winning? Is that when we win, see, winning is the result, the destination. But the process of doing what it takes to win is also quite fun. I will tell you, I was up late last night, folks, and I was doing research. Next week, at the Entree Leadership Summit, which is a Ramsey Solutions event. It's our big leadership events, like the Super Bowl of leadership events in Orlando, Florida. I'm going to be interviewing Nick Saban. Did I tell you this, Joe? Joe is our resident Alabama fan. He's not wearing Alabama clothing today, but there he is. He's got his, what do you got on today? Oh, your Echo chainsaw hat.
Yeah, a sound guy with an Echo hat.
Yeah, I like what you're doing there. And so I am preparing to interview Nick Saban in front of 3,000 plus leaders and doing tons of research on him. Very excited about this. And this is fresh on my mind. You know, obviously this is one of the greatest coaches to ever coach in any sport. And this guy's commenting on winning and what he says about winning and what it takes to win. And make no mistake, folks, if you want to make more money and experience more meaning in this life, and you do because you're in this show, you're competing. And if you don't start acting like you're competing, you're going to get behind. And so I'm your coach, and I'm going to help you compete. And one of the ways I help you compete is keeping you informed. Let's go. It's time for In the News. All right, headline from CBS News, Carvana. Are you familiar with this Carvana company? If you're not, Carvana is like cars in a vending machine, is the way I describe it. When you drive along the interstate and you see this glass structure, three or four stories tall, and it's got cars in it, and I guess you go get a token and you put it in and the car comes down and you drive it away, I guess. I got to tell you, disconnect for me. I'm not going to go put a token in a machine and have a car come out. All right. The old school 25 cent bubble gum, I'm your guy. I'll do that all day long. Greatest bubble gum of all time for 30 seconds. And then it tasted like concrete. All right. But so Carvana, boy, oh boy, here we go. Another just ridiculously awful treatment of people. Carvana. I'm not going to buy one of their cars anyway after this. Here's the headline. Carvana fires 2,500 workers via Zoom. This is where we are in today's world. I don't want to sound like some old man and some old-fashioned grandpa here, but with the onslaught of digital and online communication, crap like this happens. Companies decide to lay off 2,500 people, most of them via Zoom or email. Two workers lost their jobs in layoffs. In these layoffs, told CBS Money Watch that they have heard nothing directly from their managers at Carvana. Instead, they were informed first via the CEO's email on Tuesday morning this week. And then a short time later, they lost access to the company's corporate network, including email and Slack. And then they received text telling them to attend a Zoom meeting, where a woman informed them that their jobs had been cut. Doesn't even sound like it was their leader. Just some woman with a Carvana polo shirt. You got to be kidding me. Jay Romero said it was a scary experience. He'd worked for Carvana for more than 2 years in Phoenix. I had no support from anybody, no management, no team leads. One of Carvana's slogans is, treat customers as you would treat your own mom, and we didn't even get treated that way as employees. Another worker who was laid off said employees were told to keep working even after getting the email notifying them of being laid off. Now, see, that's just stupid. That's just stupid. You know, the old school golden rule, you know, think about that. You're going to lay somebody off via email, which is about as insensitive as you could possibly be. There's no dignity there. And then you're going to say, we need you to keep working. I got to tell you something, man. What are we thinking? We think people are robots? It's ridiculous. Lee France, 26, of North Liberty, Iowa, said she had no direct contact from her managers about losing her job, only learned that she had been let go after getting booted off of email in the Zoom call. They were doing mass layoffs in these Zoom calls. And workers weren't allowed to ask questions on the Zoom call. It was so disrespectful. Absolutely. Look, if you're going to be so insensitive that you lay people off via Zoom, at least allow them to ask some basic HR questions. Or maybe you just go through the trouble of putting together a PDF that they can read, you dolts. But you're not going to allow them to ask any questions? They just got fired. They got questions. You're not going to allow them to ask questions? I got to tell you, this stuff pisses me off because it is killing the American worker's view of leadership. I think everybody's this way. And by the way, when we see headlines like this, is there any wonder that we're approaching 40 million people have left their jobs since August 2021? You know why? Because they're basically going, screw you. You don't care about me. I'm going to go get the best check I can. I'm going to get mine. You don't give a crap about me. That's a fact. All right? Now, you know, nobody else is saying that. I'm telling you, this is the natural human reaction. All right. Let's see. I had a quote here. Oh, here we go. This is from Carvana. This makes it even better. These idiots. Spokesperson sent an email to CBS News. Boy, these people love emails and non-human communication. There's a big clue. Carvana said in a statement, as many conversations as we could, we did in person. And where in person was not possible, we spoke to our team members over Zoom. Not all of the conversations were through Zoom. Sounds like an 11-year-old going, well, I didn't do it all the time. As if that's supposed, oh, okay, I'm sorry. You didn't do it. Oh, okay, it was hard. It was going to be difficult for you to actually have a manager speak to their team member. It was so hard. It's unbelievable. All right. Switching gears, inflation. How's it affecting small business? 34-year-old Joseph Charles. This is from an NPR article. With hard work and a little bit of luck, steered his Boston pizza place through the pandemic. When indoor dining was banned in Boston, he worked 7 days a week adapting his business model and hustling pizzas and subs out of the window that was already built into his place of business to mask customers. So via sidewalk or cars pulling up. He said it was tough, but we did what we had to, and fortunately, we're still alive. We're still here. Now, his sales during the pandemic did grow. He rebounded, or they grew after initial shutdown. They grew to about 75% of what they were pre-pandemic. But now they slumped again. Why? Because of inflation. Customers are cutting their spending, and he's trying to balance the idea of how much do I pass on my higher costs for food, fuel, delivery drivers, all these things. He has to pass it on or absorb it. What does he do? So sky-high food prices, higher costs for rent, labor, gasoline, cooking gas, just some of the costs. Wholesale food costs were 17% higher in March than the same time last year. Average hourly earnings for restaurant and bar employees has risen 15%. On the weekends, listen to this, he used to pay $400 to pay for delivery drivers. Now it's swelled to $1,000. And he's reimbursing his drivers for gas. This is his direct quote. You've got to be creative to keep people. You really do. So what we've got is we had this big clamoring for, I need to make more money because the economy's bad. I'm glad for it. But when we raise all these wages, guess what? This gets passed on to the customer. I said this on this show. Raising wages is not a silver bullet. We're worried about making more. Maybe we ought to be worried about keeping more. There's an idea. I don't know. This is the Ken Coleman Show coming up next. We're going to coach you up. Don't move. All right, folks, welcome back to the Ken Coleman Show. I want to go to a question really quick in the YouTube chat room. Our YouTube crazies is what I call them. Eli Bromlow's got a really good question in the chat room. I want to answer this very quickly because this is going to happen more and more and more in the environment we are in right now. He said, Ken, what do you do if a potential employer that ghosted you is now reaching out to offer you the same job you applied for a few weeks ago? So this is a very interesting question. All right, so I don't have Eli on the phone, and so I can't dive into a few details. But if what he means is he applied for a job and they either never responded to him, so that's a form of ghosting, or what really most likely happened is they had an initial conversation with him and they started the process, and then they dropped him like a bad habit, and they never returned his calls. So you might think, Eli, that this is ghosting. They may go, it's only been a couple weeks, and we're in the hiring process. We're talking to a lot of people. I don't know which way it goes, but here's the point. Whether you feel it's ghosting or not, or whatever, I would absolutely reach back out to them. I would respond and go, hey, guys, it's good to hear from you. I got to tell you, I felt, you know, like you ghosted me a little bit because we were talking and then boom, nothing. You know, you're not going to make them feel guilty about it, but I would own that. I'd go, yeah, I'm willing to talk. I'm a little bit hesitant because in this job market, you've got leverage. And so if they bring you back for an interview process, in the interview process, I would say, hey, how many people are you considering? You know, I would ask questions around what you were worried about. But I'd certainly engage. Nothing wrong with engaging, but use your discernment. Ask questions. Was that an administrative reason? They're a little bit of a disaster, maybe a little bit of loose with their ability to communicate well. Is that a red flag? Is it a yellow flag? Is it a nothing burger? I don't know. Use discernment, folks, in these job interviews. Ask questions that are deeply penetrating, because remember this, especially in this job market, hottest job market all time, the job interview is just as much for you as it is for them. But we, the worker, we kind of have this mentality that, like, well, I'm got to go put my best suit on and it's like a first date and I got to really impress them. It's like, wait a second. Yeah, but it's also for you to decide, do you want to date them? Do you want to get married to them? Like, don't lose that. Speaking of which, this job search process is just, in today's world, it can be lonely and awful because of all the artificial intelligence, and you never get any answer at all, or you get ghosted like this guy, Eli, did. That's why I endorse ZipRecruiter. You just heard, ZipRecruiter has companies that are paying them for access to you, the talent. It's a free resource, and ZipRecruiter does all the work for you. You fill out one profile online at ZipRecruiter.com, attach your resume. They start pitching you all the time, and you're going to stand out from the crowd because companies are paying Zip for talent. So Zip emails the company or says, hey, you need to look at this person. It's a great service. It's free to you. It doesn't cost you a dime. I don't know why you wouldn't add it to your get hired tool belt. ZipRecruiter.com, ZipRecruiter.com. All right, let's go to Lacey now in Indianapolis, Indiana. Lacey, you're on the Ken Coleman Show.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm living the dream. What's going on with you?
Oh, I'm doing really good. Hey, I was calling, just needing some advice. I am a social worker right now, and I am thinking about getting out of the field. I am looking at going into real estate, actually, but I'm very apprehensive for a few reasons, and one of which is real estate being a market where, you know, I don't know what I'm going to be making, and I'm worried about failing and not making any money. And the second reason is because I have worked so hard for my degree, and I feel terrible giving this up.
Okay. A lot going on here. Okay.
Yes.
and let me boil it down to, you're spending too much time thinking.
Yeah.
And you need to start. Right. Yep. And you got to start acting. You have already determined that real estate is something that you want to do. True or false?
Yes. And I actually am working on getting my license right now.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So stop thinking. You're not going to fail.
I know.
What would have to be? No, seriously. Let's have some fun with this, Lacey. Tell me what would have to be true for you to fail in real estate and not make any money.
I guess I would not have any clients.
Right. Yet you never sell a house, whether you're a listing agent or whatever. You understand what I'm saying? Or you're a selling agent. Yeah. Come on. Why did you want to get into real estate? Give me your why. Give me the fun why from your heart.
Well, I honestly think it's something that fits my personality really well. Mm-hmm. I'm a very extroverted person. And whenever I've talked to my close friends and family about doing this, they automatically are like, that would be perfect for you.
Yeah.
I grew up in a mobile home, and I think it's something that is so important for me to, you know, get out of that cycle. Whenever I bought my first house, it made me feel, even though it was this little cheap, dinky house, it made me feel like I was rich whenever I bought my first home, you know?
That is really powerful. I even heard a little emotion in your voice. You want to talk about a why.
Definitely.
You want to talk about a why for a real estate agent? That's a great why. You grew up in a mobile home, and to get your first real home was such a momentous occasion in your life. And you see so much attached to a person buying a home, whether it's their first home or they're leveling up or it's their dream home. There's no stopping you, Lacey. So I have a couple questions. Are you willing to take your training and do everything you can to win?
Yeah.
Are you willing to sit with other real estate professionals that maybe your broker you work for, whatever, and glean from them and go to conferences and work on getting coached to be the best real estate professional that you could possibly be? Are you willing to do that?
Yes.
Okay. How much money do you make as a social worker?
Not very much. I make $16 an hour right now.
Okay. How many houses would you have to sell in your first year? Just think your area, Indianapolis, Indiana, median home sale price. How many houses would you have to sell to make double what you make as a social worker? You got an idea?
Not very many.
That's right. So but here's my homework assignment for you, Lacey. By the end of today, before you go to bed tonight, I want you to look up the median home price in Indianapolis, and I want you to run the numbers on a commission, full commission, split commission. You do it any way you want to. And how many houses would it take for you to sell to double your social worker salary? Not meet it, but double it. That's your homework assignment.
Okay.
You need real numbers in your head because you've got this thing spinning in your head that I might fail. I'm never going to make it. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. How many, take a wild guess just for me. We're not holding you to this. How many houses do you think it is? Median home sale price in Indianapolis. How many do you think you got to sell?
I don't know. Maybe 10, 15.
Yeah, I don't even think it's that much. I don't think it's that much, but we'll see. You run the numbers, okay?
Okay.
All right, now, let's address this last issue. You feel guilty for leaving social work.
Yes.
I get it.
And part of that is I was in sales and marketing before I was in social work, and I did that while I was in school. And, you know, I switched right away. Within a month of graduating, I got my degree, started doing that, and
Stop.
Now I feel like I'm almost backtracking.
Stop. You're not backtracking. You're moving forward to do what you love to do. You are advancing towards a dream. You're not doing anything morally or ethically wrong. Don't apologize for pursuing your purpose and passion. Those kids or the people you work with, they'll be another social worker. It is not your responsibility, and you can't put their future on your shoulders. You're doing this because you're a good person. But this is a lie from the pit of hell. And I'm just going to tell you that. The evil one is trying to convince you that by you going after and doing what it is you believe you were created to do, something you believe you could be successful at, that all of a sudden you're crapping on or you're doing a disservice to other people you serve. That's a lie from the pit of hell. It has no reason behind it at all. It's not truth. It's a lie. There you go. I set you free. Head up, move forward. This is the Ken Coleman Show. Press on.
Thanks for listening to the Ken Coleman Show. For more, you can find the show on demand wherever you listen to podcasts and watch the show on YouTube. You can also find Ken across all social media by following at Ken Coleman.
If you enjoy this podcast, you should check out other great podcasts from the Ramsey Network, like Borrowed Future. Not so fun fact, America has a $1.6 trillion student loan crisis, and it's out of control. I'm George Camel, host of the Borrowed Future podcast, where we uncover the underbelly of the student loan industry and show you what you can do about it. It'll inspire you to see that it is possible to avoid student loans and graduate college debt-free. Listen to Borrowed Future wherever you listen to podcasts.